Hi Dom, great to be with you again.
Hi Henry, how are you? What's going on in your neck of the woods?
No, a lot of stuff going on this week and next. So I mean, just in terms of what we've just had this week, we had the ECB. So they cut once again, as expected. Really, it was quite a boring meeting, to be honest. They didn't update their forecasts. Because of the meeting, but there wasn't a lot of extra sort of commentary really from Lagarde or from the press really, or from the comment, the sort of statement even, which is kind of what I'd expected. Right now, the ECB is very much they're all sorry. Continue.
But Henry, does it make sense for the ECB to cut when Europe seems to be having a supply shock rather than a demand shock? I mean,
I mean, it is. I mean, I think the key thing that their line is right now is that they can get back down to neutral, so they're above neutral right now. Where neutral is unclear, but they see policy as being relatively tight. And whilst I mean, I think supply shock, I'm not so sure of. I think the issue right now is, I mean, the real sort of worry is the tariffs, and I think the way that they would see the tariffs is partly in inflation, if there is retaliation, but also it's going to probably really hurt their manufacturing and probably could see to their in their from their perspective is a rise in late sort of unemployment, so a real kind of loosening in the labor market. And right now they're really kind of a lot of their expectations are based on consumption bouncing back because of real wage rises, etc. But we've not seen it yet. So anything that kind of disrupts that is, I think, is a little concern for them.
are they not spending their ammunitions before they found out what the US has actually in store for them?
No, it's a good point. I think I mean, to be honest, I think they haven't decided together whether tariffs would be hawkish or dovish. I think what they would like to say is it's a fiscal problem, really. And therefore, if there's sort of issues in the external market and there's those kind of issues, it's not the bank, the ECB, to really resolve. It should really be sort of fiscal loosening. But no one's really spending right now in terms of the government, so it's very hard to lean in on that. So right now, it's just, I mean, I guess it's a little bit of ostrich head in the ground. They've got this kind of view. Nothing has really shaken it, and therefore they'll stick to it until something does. So yeah, as I say, all their views are based on no tariffs. So anything that we, I mean, you're going to be able to give us a little bit more information on that, as to what we can see next week, maybe. But anything that sort of changes that will have to then get baked in and reacted to. But I mean, that's the side that's going to be very hard to guesstimate in terms of what will the US do. It's all, a lot of it is as you're very aware. Sort of personalities and personality clashes potentially, but even without that, I mean the inflation data I think is less or may end up being less benign than they hope. Certainly, the labor market's much tighter, so we'll get a little bit more information on that on Monday. But the only problem is that Q1 inflation data in Europe is very volatile. So while I do see this risk of service inflation overshooting, the ECB is probably going to be quite happy to ignore that until at least after their March meeting when they have the whole of Q1 data. So that's what we're watching sort of this week will be on Monday we get the January inflation and seeing if that services momentum was strong. Just from the national numbers, German was relatively strong, France was relatively weak, but they looked a bit strange. So we'll have to be just get the kind of overall numbers before we really take a strong position, but that's something that's kind of quite important. And that's pretty much everything that we've had this week from Europe, really. As I say, a lot of it is tariff watching. But then this coming week, so one thing that did kind of slightly interesting come out of her presser was she sort of highlighted that on February the 7th, so on Friday, the ECB is going to release an estimate of R-star. So
An
basically,
estimate of our star. You see, in the US, we are much more pragmatic.
yeah.
We accept that we cannot get reliable estimates in real time, and we don't publish or spend time getting those. But perhaps, when you are a central bank for God knows how many different countries, this is one
Yeah.
of the rituals you follow to build consensus.
Yeah, I think it is partly a consensus building exercise. I think it may have also been kind of forced upon them by the fact that each, well, not each, but quite a few of the national central banks have been giving their own opinions about where our star may be or they think it is, for the last few months, really. And it is kind of like classic central bank problem where, I mean, they sort of say, as they say, they feel like they're restrictive right now, so they can keep cutting, but they don't know at which point it stops being restrictive. And I mean, I think the German Bundesbank head Nagel kind of summed it up pretty well, not to his credit, but saying basically, we don't know where our neutral is, but we'll get there. So like that's the so I think for now, I think as you say, it may be about kind of trying to get them a little bit more combined, sort of conjoined in terms of where they are discussed. We may also just get a really, really broad estimate. So right now, I'd estimate somewhere between 2 and 2.5% is where most of them see it. So if we get an estimate like that from the ECB, it really doesn't tell us very much extra, to be honest. And well, apart from maybe formalizing that, but equally we could get a 1.75 to 3% or something really useless, or probably not 3% in fairness, but yeah, it could be quite a broad band. So it might be a lot, yeah, less useful than that. So that's the main things on the European side, at least. And then we have the Bank of England, which is expect will cut. They'll be updating their sort of forecasts. So we're putting out a preview on that. But expectation it will be dovish, and they've been quite explicit, really, that their base case, I think, is for 100 basis points of cut this year, versus market, which is, I think, only just come around to about 75 basis points and has at times gone down to like 25 basis points because they've just basically been driven by Fed pricing. So it'll be interesting to see if we get stronger tone around that, about the bank basically saying we're intending to cut 100, and we could have upside if to that if things really turn over in the labor market, and to see if that actually does drive some divergence between US and UK rates, because that's been a bit of a painful one trying to sort of call when that's going to happen of late.
Yeah, we now have LLM indices for all the major central banks, and that has been wrote one of surprise, surprise, the Fed has a lot of influence on other central bank policy setting.
No, absolutely, yeah. So it's a good piece.
In
I would flag.
all fairness, I think it could be because the UK and the Eurozone are more dependent on external demand. So the exchange rate,
Yes,
the
certainly the UK, that's
dollar
for sure.
matters more than for us American who are really, domestic driven.
No, absolutely. I mean, and also, I mean, things. I mean, global economies do move in waves. So when the US is doing well, generally the world can sort of benefit from that as well.
We
So
hope.
we hope. But coming on to the US, there's obviously quite a bit of interesting data there
Oh,
next
nothing
week.
ever
But
happens in the US.
exactly.
Yeah, sure. So this week we got the Fed, though in my view the Fed was completely upstaged by DeepSeek and by President Trump. But so the Fed, as expected, no change in the economic assessment or in the policy outlook. To me, the more interesting story out of the Fed was the fact that you can see the administration and the Fed figuring out how to coexist kind of peacefully, because the Fed was, Powell was very careful not to say anything that could be interpreted as critical of the administration policies, and at the same time to reassert the independence of monetary policy. And after the presser, so obviously one of the people who watched the presser was President Trump. He truthed, I mean, he posted on the Truth Social that basically the Fed had not managed to bring down inflation and he was going to do it himself through lower energy prices, deregulation, stronger manufacturing sector, so stronger supply side. And he also asserted that the Treasury would take control of bank supervision and regulation. So in a way,
Wow.
this was an implicit admission that monetary policy is with the Fed. It will remain in the under the Fed control. And in fact, one of the questions during the presser was whether there was any contact between the administration, between the president and Chair Powell, and Powell said none. So that I thought was important because an open conflict between the administration and the Fed would be really negative for markets. So that's good. Then the DeepSeek story, in my view, is just one episode in an industrial revolution. It's going to bring down the cost of AI. I mean, you saw the market reaction, which we discussed in our webinar, but there was only a few stocks, basically the producers of foundational model, who were really affected. The rest of the stock market did quite well, which makes sense. They will have to pay less for AI. And also, we are in a recovery, in expansion that is on a much sounder footing than the expansion of the late 1990s that was debt-driven. This time around, it's not the case. So I don't think at all that we're going to see a dot-com
Yeah.
bubble 2.0.
As a slightly maybe controversial in terms of the not being debt driven, is there an argument to say it's government debt driven?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And that's a big issue for the Trump administration. The deficit is unsustainable. We're talking about 7%. The debt is 100% of GDP and rising. So they need to implement fiscal consolidation. So they inherited a situation which is very difficult. So they need to keep growth going. While implementing consolidation, which ideally they should do over the medium term. I have very strong confidence that Secretary Bessent is thinking in those terms. But let's see, we still have to see the
Yeah.
budget, the draft budget. Let's see what it
Just a
looks like.
really quick question on that, because we've have, I mean, I've not been watching sort of all the detail, et cetera, but we've had all these sort of headlines around cutting spending or cutting sort of freezing spending, et cetera. Is that going to have any, is that just going to be a drop in the water in terms of the actual deficit, or would you expect that to appear in the numbers in the near term?
So the question is, will the deficit remain constant relative to GDP? I hope so. I am optimistic. At the same time, there was a retreat of Republican senators and House members, where they prepared the budget, and President Trump has asked for tax exemption on tips, on overtime, on social security benefits, on top of extending the tax cut from his first mandate. This has to be funded. It's not clear how you can fund it given the structure of spending. So we'll see. I remain cautiously optimistic, but it's not going to be easy to keep the budget deficit from increasing and implement all the tax cuts that President Trump has promised. So we had the Fed, then we had DeepSeek, and then we had a flurry of executive orders, including one that froze all financial assistance from the federal government, which turned out to be very disruptive. For instance, one third of states' revenue comes from grants from the federal government. So the administration overturned, canceled that freeze in federal assistance. And I think it's good because it shows pragmatism and responsiveness. And I hope those will be present when it comes to the implementation of the tariffs on Mexico and Canada. So maybe we can move on to the what's coming next
No,
week.
absolutely.
So tomorrow, February 1st, the President Trump has promised to implement 25% on imports from Canada and Mexico, which could be hugely disruptive. For instance, Midwestern oil refinery rely on Canadian oil, so they could suddenly face a 25% increase in their costs, which they would pass on, and so on and so forth. So it's still the latest is that it's still in flux, that the administration that is trying to find a compromise with Mexico and Canada that would avoid the application of these tariffs. But we'll see. I think early indications are that for all the tariff pronouncement of President Trump, actually he seems to be very pragmatic, both in terms of, letting the Fed be the Fed, even though it's not his natural inclination, and of the way he reacted to the reaction to the pause in federal financial assistance. So I'm hoping that the imposition of tariff will be avoided. Though since tariffs are going to be a source of revenues, I'm quite convinced that they will figure in the budget and that we will see a fairly significant increase in the budget. But let's see for the details.
Absolutely.
So that's the administration. Then in terms of data, we have the NFPs. And it's going to be a super interesting number this time around because we will have the benchmark revisions based on the birth, death model. Actually, the revisions are based on unemployment insurance records. So once a year, the BLS takes a very exhaustive look at unemployment insurance record to adjust the numbers. The thing is, because of the enormous increase in illegal immigration over the past few years, it's likely that unemployment insurance understates the number of people in the US. So that's an issue. The other improvement that we are going to get is a better BLS estimate of the US population. Because the way the data is produced, the household survey ratio, so for instance, the unemployment numbers, the ratio of employed people are applied to population numbers supplied by the Census Bureau. And these population numbers have completely ignored the surge of immigration in the past few years. So they are going to upgrade those numbers. And so we should get a much more realistic data. But to me, a third aspect of this release that's really interesting is that the consensus is for 150 total from 260, about 260,000 last month. So a huge decline, which is not all the fires in Los Angeles. Those are probably about 20K, no more. But in this is. This is what I've been calling for a long time, a much lower NFP and no change in unemployment. The consensus is still for unemployment at 4.1%. Why? Because the Biden administration had started to clamp down on illegal immigration ahead of the election. And so the increase in labor supply has really come down. And by the way, Powell himself alluded to this in the presser. He said that with less immigration, you would need a smaller increase in employment to balance the labor market. And I was a bit early. I discussed this in November, but I think we are going to finally see it. Otherwise, we will get the beginning of the month data, so the PMIs. Personally, I'm not as an economist, I don't give a lot of weight to those PMIs because I've really decoupled from growth data, which in my view reflects largely that partisan bias. You can see in the surveys, depending on the partisan affiliation of the respondent, they tend to be more optimistic or pessimistic. So I understand that it's important from a trading perspective, and we have our monitors that give a sense of the market impact. Potential market impact of surprises there. But from my perspective, from an economic perspective, it's not going to change much to my assessment of the outlook that remains very positive.
No, true. Yeah, I mean, I would completely echo your thoughts in terms of the PMIs. Like in Europe, they've been pretty much worse than useless. But the market still cares about them, is the weird thing. And certainly in Europe, I mean, we'll get the PMIs as well. Very seasonal, and they're kind of on the upshift right now. So I think it could play into our view, which is being more hawkish ECB, just based on the fact that they're on the upswing, and therefore we may get some more positive surprises. Which obviously is not an economic argument, but unfortunately that's kind of has been more important than probably should be in market pricing of late. I would just sort of point us to some of the good pieces we've sort of had out, and I would sort of also point towards for all our clients to sort of check out the webinar we did this week. So where we did sort of discuss the DeepSeek stuff, yourself and also our quantitative sort of strategist Dalvia. So definitely check that out. Bilal's put out a piece on Trump tariffs and some of his takes on it, which is also worth sort of checking out. Obviously we have the usual the Fed previews and overviews and same from Europe. And then we also put out a piece on Ukraine, Russia ceasefire and potential sort of impacts, particularly for sort of Central Eastern Europe. So please everybody do check out all that. Please drop us a line if you've got any questions. Thank you once again, Dom, for a great chat. And
Thank you, Henry. And to our listeners, have a great weekend and good luck next week on the markets.
absolutely. Thanks.